Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Fort Bragg's backyard, this is the show that put the 110 Nation on the map. There is only one nation, the 110 Nation, and you're listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show. Covering each and every sport across the board. There is no sport too large or too little. It's time to talk the talk. Here we go. Here's the man, the founder, and your host, Mr. CJ Sports.
Welcome, everybody, to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow me at Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports, the 110 Nation fan page, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out the site, www.110nationsports.com, for all the latest. I'll make sure that I thank Carolina Sports Plus and Fit for Life. Without these great marketing partners, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow. So I want to make sure that I thank them. We went with a little bit later of a start. We had been going back to 8 o'clock time frame, but tweed work and being under the weather, as you will hear from being stuffed up, may or may not have to blow my nose throughout this show. Hopefully not. I've been dealing with this crazy weather here in Ohio for the last couple weeks here, and been kind of stuffed up for the last week or so. But anyway, I've got a lot to jump into, talk about tonight, before we get Izzo into the studio at 9:30. So looking forward to having him join us. We had a big boxing match over the weekend. Some TB12 talks, XFL, amongst other things to jump into. Wild and Fury had their fight this weekend. I think that Wilder was the seemingly favored boxer going into this matchup. With the draw, both of them had not lost a match. He went into the first match and came out with a draw. Didn't really know what to expect going into this. Trader ends up throwing the towel, causing Wilder the matchup, which looks to be going to be causing Wilder to went out of job. As it looks like he's going to fire a Trader for throwing in a towel on a boxing match that Wilder was getting the brakes beat off of him. And by most reports and most opinions, the towel should have been thrown back in the sixth round when he was sitting on that stool and looked like things weren't going well. I've heard of all. Being upset about that, fire the Trader, to blaming his 45-pound costume on the defeat. A man that proclaimed after the boxing match there was no excuses, has had nothing but excuses since. That he won't be, he will be exercising his rematch clause that he had put into the contract in case he lost. But said he will not be coming to the ring in the same kind of costume that he wore when he came to the boxing match. I don't know if y'all have seen this costume. Something you would have saw on The Masked Singer or something. I don't know what the hell this dude was thinking. But I guess this costume weighed about 45 pounds. And He has claimed that that weakened his legs and caused him to lose his boxing match. And I don't know. I think we've heard it all. Like I listened to earlier today, was it like that was the first time he put that costume on? So it's not like he didn't know what he was getting into when he was going to that match. Next thing you know, he loses the next match. He's gonna blame it on the fact that, you know, there's that fury he got carried into this round to the second fight. He gets carried into the third fight and Wilder loses. Is that going to be the next excuse? Well, I was worn down by the walk to the ring while Fury was carried and he had an upper. I mean, come on. You got your ass kicked. Just go with it. Like, you're in the profession of boxing. I can understand, you know, you were in high school and you went, and maybe you come up with the excuse of why you got your ass kicked because you're not a professional fighter and this is not what you do for a living. But you're a professional fighter that boxed another professional boxer, and you're not going to win every boxing match that you're in. Eventually, you're going to lose. Eventually, Mike Tyson lost. Eventually, Ronda Rousey lost. Like, you're eventually going to lose. So why worry about having excuses? You're not going to be undefeated your entire life. So just suck it up. You get an opportunity to lose again. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to pick Wilder to win the third matchup here. I'm not saying he's going to lose, but you got an opportunity to lose again. Curious to see if there's going to be a buildup for this. There was quite a buildup going into the Wilder-Fury 2 fight. But being how it was a draw in the first matchups, he kind of got... And then you watch Fury just beat the brakes off of him. Is there a way to build up the pay-per-view sales? Is there a way to really hype up this boxing match? You don't listen to a man blame a 45-pound costume that he decided to wear to the ring and is already going to, reports are, get rid of his trainer for throwing in a towel when, honestly, it should have been thrown earlier in the boxing match. What angle is the marketing or your people going to do to try to help hype this up? Because there's going to be people that are going to watch this, but I think you're going to see more people that are going to be willing to go to bars in different places where they might just pay a slight cover charge, go somewhere where they can have drinks versus worrying about having get ordered at home or have a party at their house and pay that amount of money for a match that unless you can figure out something is not going to be very remarkable. So I don't know. A lot of talks. A lot of talks. Gotta be the talks of the day, especially since reportedly Green Bay is going to offer or is offering New England. I don't know if that's Green Bay or not. New England is offering Tom Brady a 2-year deal. First of all, we all know that Tom Brady is actually wanting a 3-year deal. Tom Brady's wanting to play until he's 45, which New England, after he won the Super Bowl, shot that down. And so the likelihood of us seeing New England give him a 3-year deal after last year. Not that it was a horrible season, but it wasn't like the Super Bowl run the previous year or the MVP run the year before that. We know it's very unlikely. I think in order to even get the 2-year deal, you're probably going to see a sacrifice in money because, let's be honest, how willingly is the Patriots to commit to 2 years and a lot of money to a player that is going to be just short of 45 when this contract's up? I mean, let's be honest now. I understand New England's stance on this. And everybody's going to want to throw out there the whole commitment to loyalty. Look, you've been loyal to this guy for, and I understand this dude was taking pay cuts, and that's a lot of people's argument. At some point, you put the horse down. You got to shoot the dog. I mean, at some point, you got to cut your ties. Don't go on forever. And my whole thing with this is I'm listening to these people talk, well, he can go this team and lead them to Super Bowl or help bring championship to this team. First of all, how many players or quarterbacks have you seen go from one team to another in that first year instantly? Super Bowl, we're in. I mean, come on, how many teams? And of the teams that are shooting, they're shopping for quarterbacks, how many teams, that is the only piece they're missing? Like, legitimately, we throw a top-notch quarterback in there. Oh, that's the only piece missing. That we can get them to learn a system right out the gate. They're going to the Super Bowl because every other piece is in place. Nine out of ten times, the reason they're shopping for a quarterback is the team's falling apart. And either they couldn't hold on to their quarterback or they've had so many issues that there's a reason. There's not any teams out there that right out the gate, Tom Brady, even in his prime, would be able just to walk into the system and lead him to the Super Bowl, not to mention a 42-year-old quarterback. I mean, some of these conversations, I scratch my head because you guys are talking like – he's in his 20s, mid to late 20s, in his prime, and well, he's gonna come to this team, or he can go to that team, or this team could pick him up, and you know, he could lead him to the playoffs or Super Bowl. Whatever. First of all, this is a 42-year-old man. Even in his prime, did you ever see this guy run? Like, I've seen turtles run faster than him. He's not a mobile quarterback. I mean, it took him about 20 years to even hit 1,000 yards or whatever it was. Like something ridiculous, like he's not a mobile quarterback. So now you're. It's not like the Dallas Cowboys or the Oakland Raiders that have a great offensive line that are looking for, you know, it's their quarterback. I mean, I understand Oakland's an there's an opportunity there. I just can't see them coming off Derek Carr for a Tom Brady for a season or two. Like, I just don't see. If you're going to move off Derek Carr, then you move for the future, not for the possibility of a season, and that's it. I don't know. Something tells me that going to Las Vegas is not really Tom Brady's kind of scenery as well. But anyway, so you're gonna have to have one of the best offensive lines to protect him because he's not a quarterback. He's not going to be moving around. And then you already got to have receivers in place. And you've got to have receivers that are going to be willing to learn a system similar to what Tom Brady's been used to for 20 years versus the current system they are in. So that's the whole adjustment and change that's going to happen in the first season, no matter where he goes. And let's get into the talk of a system. Everybody talks like Tom Brady is the best thing since sliced bread, the new cubby. Once again, first of all, he's 42 years old. But two, he's only played in one system. And it took him years to perfect that system, and he only knows that system. It looks good in that system. Who is to say he is going to look good playing for anybody else other than in the Bill Belichick system? Like, how many quarterbacks can we name that have come out of that Bill Belichick system that have been backups, have had opportunities to play, or can we forget Matt Castle, who played pretty much a whole entire system, looked great, was what the only 11-5 team not to go to the playoffs, if I remember, 10-6 or 11-5 team not to go to the playoffs, had a great year, then went and played for other teams and was garbage because of that Bill Belichick system. I'm not saying Jimmy G is garbage, but he looked much better in New England in a system that Bill Belichick has versus playing in San Francisco. Well, he just went to, I understand he just went to the Super Bowl. But I also understand he only threw like 8 passes in one of the playoff games. I'm not saying he's not a good quarterback, but there's a difference when you play in the Bill Belichick system. There's a lot of players that have looked like superstars in the Bill Belichick system that has gone on, took their talents elsewhere, and has not shined as well in another system. And that's just the Bill Belichick system. I'm not, and I've never been, this has been a discussion we've had for years, I don't know if I'm convinced that Tom Brady is necessarily that great of a quarterback. In the Bill Belichick system, yes, he is great. He has won multiple Super Bowls. He will go down as a GOAT. He will go down as Hall of Famer and all these things. I will not dispute that. I will not argue that. But I do question whether or not if he would have played in another system, would he have had the career that he had? Would he play for another team? Did he play in a Bill Belichick system? A system that's never been duplicated. We've had many players come and go. We've had many coaches come and go. We've had coaches go on to be head coaches. Never once has this system been duplicated. I don't understand what the duplicity of this system or what is encoded or inbred or what it is about the system that is never duplicated and nobody else seems to have anything even similar to it. But it has been very successful for New England. How they've been to like the playoffs every year since Bill Belichick's been here. I think they missed what, 1 year or something, maybe 2 years. So obviously, you know, and they've won the AFC East. God knows how many times, 16 times, 15 times, something stupid. Like, there's something obviously to this Bill Belichick system, and it kills me because it's something that's never discussed. So you're going to convince me that not only one, a 42-year-old quarterback that is not mobile is able to be pulled out of one system and put on any other system. Most of these teams that are options are teams that are leaps and bounds away from being in the playoffs. Most of these teams are not even in the 500 yet. And so you're going to convince me that you're going to pull a 42-year-old man that is not mobile and is going to go play for any one of these teams that playoff or Super Bowl contenders. And then on top of that, you're going to try to convince me that you're going to pull him out of the Bill Belichick system, a system that has never been able to be duplicated, the most successful system in the entire NFL. And you're going to convince me that he is going to once again lead a team in a different system at 42 years old, not mobile, on teams that are not very good, the playoffs and the Super Bowl. That's what you guys are going to try to convince me of. What honestly needs to happen? What needs to happen? That New England and Tom Brady come to a mutual agreement. Come to a happy middle. 2 years, fine. 2 years with an option. There's an option for a third year depending on and set stipulations. You have to play to this level in order for the third year to be an option. To come to a happy medium somewhere on the amount. Look, 2 years, $30 million, $30 million, whatever their numbers have been. Somewhere to a happy medium on 2 years. And then the third year option, as long as you leave us the playoffs the next 2 years, or as long as you so many yards, playoffs, or what, I don't care what the stipulations are. One, this gives New England 2, possibly 3 years to go ahead and get their quarterback for the future. Two, this gives Tom Brady the opportunity to finish his career in New England. The possibility of playing the 45 like he wants, the opportunity to play with the only head coach in the only system he's ever known,
the ability to play with a system that's going to protect us, so mobility is not an issue, and an opportunity to play with some of the best players, because most players want to go play in the Bill Belichick system because they know that they're going to have an opportunity to play in the playoffs, potentially the Super Bowl. And that also leaves you in still what is still the very weak AFC East, because there's really no change with the other three teams, with the Jets, Dolphins, and Buffalo. I think Buffalo got maybe a little bit better, but not enough that it's a serious threat that we feel that the New England Patriots are not going to make the playoffs. Come on. Not as long as Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are still together. XFL, talking about football. XFL had another great week. We got to see some things this weekend. One, didn't think that the DC Defenders or Houston, those were the teams. Like I thought, we were seeing the two teams that were going to kind of run with it on each side, and that's who we're going to see in a championship game. And then we watched the DC Defenders get handled. I want to believe the final score was like 39-9. Cordell Jones did not have a great day. It seemed that nothing went their way at all. And it was a rough day as LA put a beat down on them. Houston did come away with a win, but Houston's game was much closer than expected. Showed that maybe they're not as good or as invincible as I thought. At least going into week three. And I understand we're in week three and all, but you also got to understand there's only 10 weeks. So where in the NFL, we really don't start really put kind of labels on teams until you hit week four, maybe week six. Because you've got 16 weeks, we're already third of the way through the season. I mean, 30% of it's done. So much shorter season, and so you kind of got to put the labels on and kind of speculate what we're going to be looking at, and what we got. St. Louis, big shout out to St. Louis. First time, what, four years? What'd they say? 3 years, something like that. And they had a football game in St. Louis, sold out crowd. You could definitely hear the crowd there. It was great to hear and great to see the fans show up for the St. Louis team kick return. Got to see one of those. Got to see we got to see what the possibilities were with this kickoff. We already knew with the kicker lined up by himself and the receiving team down there, what, the 30 and the kicking team at the 35, 5 yards apart, that we were seeing something different and things were going to be a little more difficult. And we was waiting for it. We was waiting for that kickoff. We started to see reverses and pitchbacks and everything else. And we got an opportunity this weekend to see St. Louis take one to the house. And got to see some three-point plays and two-point plays, conversions. So got to see some chippiness. I think we're seeing some things that backflips. We kind of see a lot of things this weekend out of the XFL. Very thankful for another great weekend of football and great to have a Saturday and Sunday where there was no Dak is not talking to Dallas, and Dallas is not talking to Dak talk, or where is Tom Brady going to play at 42 years old and not mobile, never played in another system. Got an opportunity just to watch football. And so very thankful for that. We got Izzo in the studio. We got a lot of things to jump into tonight. We got the three stars of the week. We got trades. We got a Zamboni driver playing goalie. We got a lot of things going on. Yes, you heard that right. We got a lot of things that went on in the NHL this last week. So we got him in here, dipping in here a little bit early. We got a lot of things to cover tonight. Without any further delay, Izzo, how are you doing tonight?
Man, we're doing pretty good, man. We got so much craziness that's happened in the last 27 hours, 28 hours or so, even 48 hours ago. So, you know, we're going to dive into the trade deadline things. We also, like you said, had a Zamboni driver play goalie for the Carolina Hurricanes. We're going to dive into that too. Also, big news, Ovechkin hits number 700 for goal tallies for his career. You know, so we got that to cover too as well. But right now, we do have a slew of games going on right now with about 12:50 left to go in the third. Calgary, the Flames are in Boston taking on the Bruins. The Flames are up 3-1 on that. Also in the third period with about 4:20 left, we got the Vancouver Canucks in Montreal taking on the Canadiens. That game is tied at 3 apiece right now. Maple Leafs are in Tampa Bay taking on the Lightning. This is a big Atlantic Division matchup going on right now. There's about 2:15 left to go in the third. The Maple Leafs are up 4-3 on the Lightning. Also, with about 2:25 left to go in the third, the Rangers and the Islanders are doing battle over in Long Island right now. The Rangers have a 3-2 lead on the Islanders right now in the third period. So that's a good game to kind of check out as well. Also in the third, with about 2:15 left, on NBC Sports, we have the Sharks taking on the Philadelphia Flyers in Philly. Philly is up on the Sharks 4-2 in that game. Also in the third, with 6:30 left to go, the Jets are in the nation's capital taking on the Capitals. Capitals hold a 3-2 lead over the Jets right now in that one. Also in the third period right now, it's a game that's on locally for me right now that I just got to turn on here. The Stars are in Carolina taking on the Hurricanes. The Stars are up 4-1 against the Canes on that one with about 4:45 left to go in the third. And then early in the third period right now in Detroit, the New Jersey Devils are taking on the Red Wings. The Devils are up 3-0 on that game. This game is on NBCSN, not the other game I did mention before. Please excuse me. The Chicago Blackhawks are in St. Louis taking on the Blues. The Hawks currently hold a 3-2 lead in the second period with about 7:45 left to go. Also with 8:30 left to go in the second, the Senators and Predators are doing battle in Nashville. Ottawa and Nashville doing some back and forth tonight. Predators are up 3-2 in that game. Jay, your Blue Jackets right now are in Minnesota, the state of hockey here in the United States. The Jackets are down 3-1 against the Wild right now with about 3:25 left to go in the second period. Just a little over halfway in the first period, we got the Florida Panthers in the desert taking on the Arizona Coyotes. That game is still tied at 0. And then we have one later game at 10 p.m. Eastern time. The Edmonton Oilers are going down to Southern California to take on the Anaheim Ducks. And like I said, that's the last game we have on the night. But without any further ado, Jay, we got a lot to cover, so we could dive right into it.
That we do, and according to the notifications on my phone throughout the week, Blue Jackets have not had a great week. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit. But first headliner, Ovechkin finally hits that 700 mark, big milestone for him. Izzo, talk a little bit about that and what that means for him to hit that milestone and where that puts him in talks of all-time NHL greats.
Well, if you really look at it, he is the eighth player to score 700 goals. I mean, and when I say that, I mean, this game has been played for over 100 years now. So, and when you look at the all-time goal list, there's stars from different generations, you know, different times of hockey, different styles of hockey. You know, Gretzky obviously is at 894 in first place, followed by Gordie Howe at 801. Those are the only two players that have hit the 800 goal mark. Jaromír Jágr, who we all know and love, has been in the league for countless many seasons, is still playing professionally over in the Czech Republic. He sits at third with 766. Brett Hall, son of the legendary Bobby Hall, at 741. Marcel Dion, who is a pretty familiar name from the old school Kings days with the purple and gold, with 731. Phil Esposito is a big name that you can remember from the '70s Bruins teams before he was traded from Chicago. He's got 717. Mike Gartner at 708. And those are the only ones that have, you know, been able to hit 700. So, I mean, it's very difficult to get 100 goals in a season. But, you know, when you start picking up into the 400, 500 goal range, a 600 goal range, a 700 goal range, I mean, that list, you know, starts thinning out really, really quick and in a hurry, almost kind of like a funnel. You know, so there was a debate that I was listening to about, you know, who could be possibly the next one to hit 700. And I don't think it's going to happen for quite some time. If you look at guys like Sidney Crosby, who's in the, I think, 450 range, 440 range, 430 range. Steven Stamkos, who's also sitting at like 420, 430 goals for his career. You know, and then you kind of have a big lap there, you know, Evgeny Malkin. I don't think Evgeny Malkin's probably around almost, I think he's almost at the 400 goal range. I don't know if he's quite netted 400 goals. I'd have to check up on that later on, but you know, there's going to be a big gap when it comes to players, special players like this. So, you know, when you're really looking at it right now, the next, you know, real legitimate shot that you have to take a look at, you know, given that Stamkos and Crosby have suffered some major injuries and have missed significant time in their careers, they could be easily in the 500 goal range right now, if not the 600 goal range. So, you know, kind of taking a look at it right now, Jay, when you really look at, you know, run a fine tooth comb through it, the only names that, you know, that really kind of stand out are guys like Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, you know, guys like that. Where they're just coming in and just lighting it up, you know. Even Pasternak, who might have a slight shot at it, but you know, I really don't know if, you know, if Matthews and McDavid are going to get up there. You know, they're going to have stellar careers. They're going to be winners no matter what. They're certainly going to be Hall of Fame players by the time their career is done, you know, given an unfortunate circumstance, you know, but these guys are definitely probably the best and brightest right now. And then, you know, getting back to Ovechkin, he's, you know, 194 goals away from catching Gretzky, which is, you know, within reach. You know, if he can, you know, he's 34 years old right now. You know, he's still under contract for a couple more seasons. You know, he's finally brought a cup to Washington, and I do believe that kind of, you know, kind of plants the seed of seeing, hey, I think he can do this. Let's, you know, let's get him to a good deal, you know, put the right tools around him, you know, so that way not only can he, you know, try and go after the record, but he's putting goals up, he's putting points up, and he's helping the team to win, you know. And if we've seen Ovechkin in the past, Jay, Ovechkin really cares about winning. You know, you could look it back at all those playoff disappointments, you know, since the beginning of his career, and you could just tell that, you know, it was starting to wear on him. And when he finally won one, and you saw the exuberance, the joy, and just the, you know, the self-gratification that just must just overcame his whole entire mindset, you know, now that he's at 700, he's in all these guys that, you know, Gretzky, Howe, Jagr, Hall, Dion, Esposito, Gartner, these are all Hall of Fame guys. These are all guys who have been winners, you know, and they had stellar careers. So, you know, congratulations to Ovechkin, and hopefully, you know, hopefully within the next, you know, 4 or 5 seasons, we could actually see him get even closer and possibly even hit the 900 goal mark, Jay. No one's ever done that before. He scored 900 goals in a career. You know, it's going to be something interesting. So I'm definitely going to be paying attention to what Ovechkin does, you know, the next 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I'd love to see him get that Gretzky record at 894 with number 895, Jay. So that's what I'm rooting for.
No, the whole Crosby talk, just for hypothetical sake, conversation, say Crosby has a injury-free rest of his career. It being this late into his career, is there realistically enough time left for him to even accomplish any 700? Or are we far enough into his career to say, even if on a perfect situation, no injuries, and on teams that produce, he could hit it?
You know, out of the two, out of Stamkos and Crosby, the two that I mentioned, you know, even Patrick Kane could have a decent shot at it too. But if you look at Crosby's career and what he's done so far, Jay, you know, he's already missed 28 games this season to a core muscle injury, you know, towards the latter end of the year into, you know, going into this year. So, you know, and if you look back, you know, I do see him getting to 500. I do see him getting to 600. You know, he's 33, 34 years old. So, you know, he's still playing at a high level. He's still regarded as probably the best player in the world. You know, and his game is constantly changing. You know, Crosby's not, I wouldn't classify Crosby as what Ovechkin does. I wouldn't classify him as a goal scorer. Is he a point producer? Yes. He can notch up 5-6 assists in a game, no problem, just because of his vision. You know, that doesn't mean that he can't score goals, because he's proven that he can done that. He's won the Art Ross Trophy before. He's never won the Rocket Richard before. You know, so I don't believe he has any 50-goal seasons, but I'd have to look at that and find out. Maybe a couple 40-goal seasons, but when you hitting 40 goals in a season is pretty impressive. When you start dipping up into guys that have hit that 50-goal mark, you know, guys like Bossy, who did it for, almost 8 seasons in a row. You know, Ovechkin, I think 11 of his 15 professional seasons, he's hit 50. You know, getting off to a hot start, I mean, the whole mantra is, you know, can you do the Gretzky, get 50 in 50 games? You know, that's the benchmark. You know, that'll probably never, at least in my lifetime, probably will never be broken. I think he had 50 and 30 at one point in time. He had like 40-some-odd goals in 38 games or something like that. So, you know, when you can score in bunches, 2, 3, maybe possibly 4 goals at a time, you know, it gives you a legit shot when you can do that maybe, you know, 2-3 times a year. But, you know, is he going to hit the 500-goal mark? Yes. Will he hit the 600-goal mark? Yes. I do believe that he's just going to be parked kind of right between 600 and 700, Jay, just because of, you know, unfortunately the time that we were robbed of watching him play during his injuries and, you know, just however the team's going to work out. So, you know, Crosby's always good for producing points, but I don't see him hitting that 700-goal mark.
Now, you shared this across the timeline or a group, the 110, and I think all of us kind of did a double take. And when I, you know, talked about the headlines going into getting you on the show, I repeated to make sure everybody heard this right. Hurricanes did something that we don't normally hear happen in pulling who the grabber goalie. Bring us to how this came about, how he did, and does this player have a career possibility? I think he's old. I don't think it's a long term, but is there more opportunities for at least a stand-in opportunity for him, especially since I know he had a good night. What happened?
You know, it was crazy. You know, James Reimer and Peter Mrazek, who are the starting goalies for the Hurricanes, both went down to injury in the game yesterday. And I think it was with under 10 minutes left to go in the second period. I think he had like 28 minutes of total ice time. The Mrazek and Reimer go down. Usually the home team does carry an emergency backup goaltender spot. Well, you know, it's kind of crazy. David Ayers, 42 years old, is actually the Zamboni guy for the AHL minor league team for the Maple Leafs, the Toronto Marlies. So he did play professional hockey there for a while back in 2004. But if I remember correctly, it was an injury that kind of set him back. And wasn't allowing him to be able to play at a professional level. So, yeah, Ayers comes in, stops 8 of 10 shots to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is, honestly, Jay, man, I really don't know. The Maple Leafs got trolled so hard with the memes, Jay, it's not even funny. When you have you when you have Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Jonathan Tavares, and you have all this goal scoring prowess, and you can't score to you know, to bring the game back, because I mean there was at one point in time Jacob Slavin was just kind of, you know, giving airs like, listen, look, just be cool. You know, we'll let you see the shot and we'll do our best. You know, it kind of got him to settle down. He did give up two soft goals, you know, at first, but he really kind of settled in and made some pretty impressive saves. But, you know, when you're Austin Matthews, guy who's touted as a 50, possibly a 60-goal scorer in a season, you know, he's going to be winning some Rocket Richard for most goals in a season here soon. And Tavares, who's just a playmaker and a goal scorer, you know, when you have offensive firepower like that and you can't get the game, you know, you can't get the game back to where you need it, that's saying something. And I think the final was like 5-3 or 6-4, something like that. You know, it was, you know, it was something crazy because the alerts started coming over my NHL.com feed and everything. And, you know, I had to double take at it too. So this is similar to the Scott Foster story for the Blackhawks last year. We all remember that one. Both Blackhawk goalies get injured. The Blackhawks usually recruit an emergency goaltender, you know, a different guy for that night's home game. And, you know, the rest is history. So, you know, Foster actually came in and played pretty well. I've seen memes where it was Scott Foster and David Ayers, and who would you start your franchise with meme? You know, it's just it's been pretty cool. You know, he was honored by the state of North Carolina. He did get a professional tryout, which I do believe that he did turn down due to his injury that he suffered. You know, so it was just a really cool story. And even watching some of the highlights, you know, you could tell he was a little bit, you know, tense at first, but once he settled in, he made some pretty key saves and didn't really give up any kind of rebounds at all. So, you know, it was just the Hurricanes doing what they were doing defensively. And, you know, Carolina's been one of the teams I've been thoroughly impressed with over these last couple of weeks, Jay, especially after today's trade deadline. So, you know, hey, all hats off. That means I still have 8 years to, to live my game, Jay. If I go to a game and hopefully, you know, somebody's goaltenders goes down and they get to call me, I'm like, hey, I'm a goalie, I'll do it. You know, I got 8 years. So, you know, David Ayers, he's definitely a hero to most beer league goaltenders this week, Jay.
So, explain, somebody that doesn't know a lot of hockey, and I'm sure some of the listeners out there are not as knowledgeable in hockey. There might be some hockey fans out there that don't know. How does the emergency, like, are they part of the roster, not part of the roster? Like, how do they determine who is basically on call for to be a player or a goalie? Like, how did he know that he was on call being there? Did he happen to be? Like, how does that work?
Well, it usually different teams do it different ways. Like I said, Chicago, cool, where they there's a league that they have there. It's an adult league. Where they kind of just pluck, you know, a name, say, hey, listen, look, by some chance this happens, you know, you're going to be our emergency goalie, you know. So,
do they go to the game and they suit it on the pitch, or they hang out in the club with their squad, or how, like, what?
No, typically they're still in their street clothes because you can only have two goalies dressed on the bench. And what happens once something does happen, they get what's called a professional tryout contract where they'll get paid a sum of money and they'll just suit up and finish the game off. That's what happened to Ayers. He did get a professional contract. I think it was like $500. He was able to keep the jersey, and I don't know if the players did anything for him, if they gave him threw him some cash. I'm not entirely too sure about the details of that. But typically you will see like a professional's tryout contract that has to be signed real quick by the emergency goaltender. You know, he gets accommodated, you know, financially, however the team handles that. Every team is different, but most times it is a professional tryout contract for a game. And, you know, and the players usually kind of, you know, I imagine the players probably kick in something. to as well. So, you know, I do know that he did receive $500 and he got to keep his jersey. Other than that, I'm not entirely too sure. I'm definitely in the dark on that, but I can imagine, especially pulling a win off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm pretty sure that they probably bought him a steak dinner and threw him some other, you know, probably some more money or something crazy. So, you know, every team is different. They do. Every team has a different system in place. Just in case if that does happen, you know, it doesn't happen as often, but, you know, at least maybe once a season, if that, you're going to run into an emergency goalie situation. So I've seen it from Scott Foster, who is, I think, a financial he worked in the financial industry. I've seen old goalie coaches who were former players in the league suit up before. I've heard stories of coaches, you know, head coaches suiting up before too, back in the early 20s and 30s, when the game was just still going off and you only had one goaltender on the bench. So usually when that happened back in the day, Jay, they would just ask people in the stands if they knew how to play goalie, you know, and they would just pull them out of the stands, sign them to a contract real quick and, you know, throw them in. So, you know, it's pretty cool.
Do you have maybe a player or two that is cross-trained and able to do that position? Like, I just think it would be easier. They would be familiar with the players, familiar with the plays, and the flow of everything versus just pulling, hey, tonight you're not driving the Zamboni. You're coming on the ice. And, you know, I know you're 42 and ain't played a while, but, you know, we need you tonight. Like, I don't know. I just think there would be a difference. I don't know. I'm about to say better systems. Obviously, North Carolina, but cross trading or something there.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it's all different. You know, generally, these guys are going to be older. Most of the time they are, you know, if not all the time, they are older, you know, upper 30s, most of the time from what I've seen in the past. I do believe this is the first time that we've had somebody who is 40-plus years old come in and finish a game off as an emergency backup situation. So, you know, typically you'd like somebody a little bit younger and spryer. It's kind of hard to get somebody from the bench to kind of do that. The skates are very different. Goalie skates and regular skates that the guys skate out with are completely different. Goalie skates aren't arched and rounded like player skates, so players can turn sharply, stop on a dime, really. Goalies don't really have that. It's more of a flatter blade, so that way, you know, because they're not cutting, you know, they need that edge to push off to make a lateral movement to – you know, make a save or get to the other side to get square to a shot or a play, you know, so it's very difficult sometimes. It is doable. I mean, I've done it a couple times where I've forgotten my goalie skates and just had my regular ice skates and had to make do, but it's very difficult to try and put your foot into the ice at a good enough angle to get enough push off to carry, you know, get that momentum going to your left or to your right, whichever the situation calls for. So, you know, every
gotcha.
Situation is different. And, it, you know, it just makes it a little bit difficult for guys.
Speaking of trades earlier, at the trade deadline, we've had quite a bit of action go on since last Tuesday's show. So let's jump into that. So let's find out who went where, who got what, and really who benefited the most, and maybe a team who kind of left scratching their head, what they were thinking, why the lopsided or lesser player or whatever the case might have been.
Well, one thing that I was really kind of impressed with was the New York Rangers. They are kind of in like a rebuild mode right now, but one of their key players who I thought was going to get shipped because the contract just couldn't be reached was Chris Kreider, who signed an extension with the Rangers to stay in New York, which I think is going to be a great fit for them. But they did end up trading one of their defensemen to the Hurricanes, which was Brady Skjei from the Rangers. for a 2020 first round pick. This is a good acquisition by Carolina. This is definitely going to shore up that defense, since you know Justin Faulk's no longer with the team over in St. Louis. So Brady Skye's got some. He's a big body kid. He can play the body, and he definitely knows how to bring the puck. So that's a good acquisition by the Hurricanes. Another big one that I was really taken off by was the Golden Knights trading for Robin Leonard, who's been sharing the goaltender duties with Corey Crawford in Chicago. This, I believe, is going to make – it definitely makes the Golden Knights the best goalie tandem with Marc-Andre Fleury and now Robin Leonard, who are both number one starters in the league. So the Blackhawks got Malcolm Subban, brother of PK, and forward Stanislav Demen and a 2020 second-round pick for that one. you know, kind of looking through the next one, another move by Carolina, who I was really, really impressed with, was picking up Sammy Vatanen from the New Jersey Devils for forward Yanni Kukanen and defenseman Frederick Claesson and a 2020 fourth-round conditional pick. Like I said, just with that Brady Skye, Vatanen is an experienced guy. You know, he's been in the league for quite some time, a very good shutdown defenseman. And I do believe the Hurricanes are going all in this year, Jay. You know, the offense has been there for them, and they're just shoring up that defense, you know, like crazy just to make a run at that Metro, because that Metro division right now is also really crazy. Also, the Blue Jackets, they acquired Devin Shore from the Anaheim Ducks for Sonny Milano. Devin Shore, I'm pretty familiar with. He was in the Penguins system there for a little bit. Good young player, got some speed to him. Should help them in their top six scoring. You know, I was a little kind of disappointed with what the lack of activity that Columbus did. I figured that they were going to try and find, you know, some top scoring with some big names being out there and everything, and they just did not do anything to impress me whatsoever. But we'll get into that here in a little bit. Also, looking at the Pittsburgh Penguins, man, were they active this trade deadline. Penguins ended up reacquiring Connor Sheary, who they shipped to Buffalo a couple of years ago. They get Connor Sheary back and Evan Rodriguez from the Buffalo Sabres in exchange for forward Dominic Cahoon, who came over from the Blackhawks not too long ago. This is a pretty good trade for just one player. Two for one, you know, you'd take that all day. Connor Sheary is a lightning-fast guy. He's got two cups with the Penguins in their back-to-back years about four seasons ago now. You know, so that was a huge move. And also, kind of looking at it too, the Penguins also acquired forward Patrick Marleau from the San Jose Sharks for a conditional third-round pick. This one took me by surprise, Jay. Marleau being 40 years old, he's chasing a cup right now. You know, he spent some time with that Toronto Maple Leaf team with Matthews and Tavares and company, Morgan Riley. And before that, spent his whole entire career in San Jose, was part of that cup final team. Where they ended up losing to the Penguins, you know, in San Jose. So Pittsburgh's going all in to shore up their offensive holes right now. So I was really impressed by that. The Buffalo Sabres picked up Wayne Simmonds from the New Jersey Devils. We all know that he was traded to New Jersey, I do believe, from Nashville after he was traded to Nashville from Philly. So Mr. Simmonds has kind of moved around a bit and everything. So Buffalo is one of those bubble teams right now trying to make some splash, you know, in the wild card race right now. So it's going to be an interesting one for that. And then these next two moves that were made, both by Metro teams, the Hurricanes, traded for Vincent Trocheck from the Florida Panthers. Trocheck is somebody that I'm very familiar with. He is a Pittsburgh boy. That's where he grew up and played all of his youth hockey. The guy I kind of closely watched during the Panthers games and everything. He's going to be great with Sebastian Aho. He's definitely going to be on that top two, one of the top two lines. He's going to eat up a lot of power play minutes too as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing him playing in Carolina with a couple guys. So You know, the Hurricanes all they had to give up was Eric Holla and Lucas Walmart, and a prospect, Luis Terranian, I think is how you pronounce his name, and defenseman Chase Prisky. So, you know, a couple of prospects and two bottom six players, bottom eight players. So that was a pretty good move by the Hurricanes right there. And then the other one I was really kind of really shocked about was the Islanders picking up Jean-Gabriel Pigot from the Senators for a conditional first-round pick and second-round pick and a conditional third-round pick in this year's coming draft. J.G. Pigot has pretty much spent all of his time up there in Ottawa. Goal scorer, speedy guy. He's got some good hands. Scored for the Islanders tonight in their game against the Rangers. So that one's already paying dividends for Lou Lamoriello and company there as well. The other big one that another one that I was really impressed with, we got two Russians that are going to be playing together. Forward Ilya Kovalchuk, who was sent to the – who was actually picked up off of waivers by the Canadiens, is now with the Washington Capitals via trade in exchange for a third-round pick in this year's draft. Kovalchuk, you know, despite his, I think, a five-year hiatus out of the NHL, was one of the premier goal scorers. And he could have been definitely another one of those guys, Jay, that could have hit 700 goals. I do believe he's at, like, 526, if I'm not mistaken. It's kind of unfortunate that he wasted that 5 years over in the KHL. But good move by the Capitals to kind of shore up that offense a little bit. You get two Russian guys playing together, anything can happen with that one. And I'm looking forward to seeing that one, too, as well. also, some names that I thought that were going to be moved that weren't. Just kind of looking over it. Joe Thornton, who is willing to move his no-trade clause to get on a team with a contender, was not moved. He's very disappointed about this. He's been in the league now 22 years. There were hot rumors about him going back to Boston and also a reunion with Joe Pavelski in Dallas, but unfortunately things weren't able to go for him. Another name that I was kind of shocked it wasn't moved was goaltender Jonathan Quick from the LA Kings. I figured that he might be picked up by somebody that's a cup contender, one of those teams that's on the bubble or on the lower end of the playoff standings right now. And also another big name that was really getting shopped around was Zach Parise of the Minnesota Wild. There were a couple teams that were interested in him, but they couldn't make the deal work and everything. And it's, you know, it was kind of really crazy how that one kind of, you know, played out, because they did try to move a couple other people that, you know, they just kind of put down their no trade clause right there. But with Parise staying in Minnesota, you know, I was kind of really a little bit shocked about that too as well. So, you know, there were some names that, you know, they ended up getting moved around, some names that kind of stayed place. Like I said, I do believe the Rangers made the right move when that comes up. But, you know, kind of looking at the losers, you know, guys that were just really inactive, the Dallas Stars, the Colorado Avalanche, the Columbus Blue Jackets, Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Predators are all jostling and battling for positions in the playoff race right now. And none of these teams really made a big splash to really separate themselves. You know, Colorado was probably, you know, the biggest disappointment because they have the most salary cap space. And, you know, all he did was end up all the Avalanche did, Joe Sakic, former captain, now the GM, you know, just only picked up Michael Hutchinson and Vladimir Nemestikov, you know, who's going to be probably in the bottom six. And Hutchinson is probably, probably going to be a backup goaltender for them too as well. So, you know, when you look at it, you know, those teams right there kind of really, you know, really, really disappointed me. But, you know, kind of looking at the winners, you know, I do believe that the Penguins and the Capitals, you know, are definitely winners, with the Pens getting back Connor Sheary and getting Evan Rodriguez and picking up Patrick Marleau, who's still, you know, relevant right now. and Ilya Kovalchuk. Between those two guys, they have over 1,000 career goals. So these guys have zero Stanley Cups, and they're chasing them. You know, Marlowe's 40, Kovalchuk's 36, and you know they're riding Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin to the promised land to try and get a cup. And you know, the biggest loser, unfortunately, throughout this whole trade deadline is probably Joe Thornton and his Stanley Cup quest. Jay, I think, you know, is he going to want to come back for a 23rd year to try and pursue it? Is he going to want to do it in San Jose, or is he going to want to be moved to a team? So, you know, the Joe Thornton story, the Patrick Marlowe story, it's slowly becoming the, you know, the 2001 story of Ray Bourque when he went to when he went from Boston to Colorado after 21 years in Boston to finally win a Stanley Cup. So that's what it's really kind of shaping up to be, Jay. And that's what you know, those are my winners and losers from this year's trade deadline.
Well, we get wrapped up. Let's hit the three stars of the week and what key matchups do we have over this next week?
Well, you know, it's I did have the three stars up. I can't remember where – that's last week. So I don't want to look at that one. But, yeah, the three stars of the week in games, we also I'm getting some news here about some other things happening going on in the – oh, okay, that's just a final score. But, yeah, taking a look back one thing I just really want to kind of address real quick. This past Saturday was the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice, so I'm always, enjoying that too. You know, that's a game from 1980, the Lake Placid Games, and we can all remember that. So big shout out to those guys, and the 40th anniversary of the 1980 team from the Lake Placid Games. So. Kind of looking at getting right into the three stars from this past week. My computer just crashed on me. That's unfortunate. We do have Wednesday night. We'll skip the three stars of the week, unfortunately, for right now. But we do have Wednesday night hockey coming up tomorrow night. And also remember, guys, now that football, well, the NFL, I should say, is over, we're going to have Sunday game of the week, too, as well, going on. Every Sunday at noon Eastern time. So looking into tomorrow night when we get into the Wednesday night hockey, we got the Penguins and the Kings doing battle out in LA, out in the Staples Center. The first game is going to be the Sabres and the Avalanche. It's 8 p.m. Eastern. Penguins and Kings immediately following that at 10:30 Eastern. That's going to be on NBC. And then kind of going through the week, on Thursday I'm going to be watching the Stars-Bruins game. That one's going to be on NBCSN. That game's going to be at 7:30 Eastern time. That's going to be a big matchup. Also on Thursday, Islanders in St. Louis taking on the Blues. I'm going to be paying attention to that. Excuse me as well. For those who have the NHL Network on Friday, we have the Rangers going into Philly to do battle against the Flyers. It's going to be a lot of bad blood in that one, people. You might want to get your popcorn ready for that one. And then when we dive into Saturday, one game on NHL Network at 12, I think at 1 p.m. Eastern, the Bruins are going to go into Long Island, take on the Islanders. It's a game that I'm going to be pretty interested in watching. And then also Stars and Blues at 7 p.m. Eastern, also on Saturday. Those are the two games that I'm really looking forward to. Excuse me. And then the game of the week on Sunday, Flyers and Rangers in Madison Square Garden. That game, like I said, will be at noon Eastern time. And then there's going to be two games on NBCSN on Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have the Capitals in Minnesota to take on the Wild. And then immediately after that, we're going to have the Kings in Vegas taking on the Golden Knights. And that's what we got on tap, the games that we got on tap, Jay, that I'm going to be watching. And as this playoff race goes down, only 5 weeks to go left in the season, Jay, so we're getting that much more closer to my favorite time of the year, brother.
Oh, lordy, lordy. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for getting here early tonight. Look forward to sitting down and recapping another great week of action, and we get another off the wall story to talk about next Tuesday night. We'll do it again next Tuesday night.
Hey, until next Tuesday night, make sure you guys pay attention to NBC and NBCSN all this week and this weekend, and we'll talk to you guys next Tuesday.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was Izzo, our NHL expert. I want to make sure that I thank everybody for tuning in. Thank Carolina Sports Plus, Spit for Life. Thursday night, 8 o'clock, Race Chat Live with Craig and Chris. Make sure you guys tune in for that. This is the guys recap Las Vegas and get you guys prepared for this weekend's action. Don't forget, check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Follow us on Facebook at 110 Nation Sports. And check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. I'll be back next Tuesday night, same time. Till next time.
Thanks for listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show with Mr. CJ Sports. You are a part of the 110 Nation, so be sure to visit the 110nation.com for everything related to the show. You can follow CJ on Twitter at 110 Nation and on Facebook at 110 Nation Sports. Until next time.